All right, so those that may not know, this is Pastor Raj and Liz Robbins right here. They've been married 12 years and have three children. This is Pastor Justin and Ann Margaret. They've been married 10 years? Yeah, same year. They have two children. 10 years, two children. This is Pastor John and Kim Herb. We've heard a lot about them. They've been married 31 years. Anniversary last week, and they have three children. That was a memory game. All right, so maybe we will start with Pastor Roger and Liz. And the question we're going to ask is, how, when the plan, when maybe your plan changes or the plan that you thought God had for you changes, and maybe he reroutes you, sets you on a different course, can you give an example of a time that has happened for you? And then how have you navigated that time together?
I like to look at everyone else when the questions are asked because I'm like, what do you guys think? So it's really great to be here, and thank you so much for doing this, Ryan, and for the whole church. We just recently came back from Turkey, and this question kind of hits home to us and our lives as we kind of live in two different places right now. In these days, we're learning that we got to be extremely flexible, and that word is like obviously taking on a whole new meaning, and the word patience is taking on a whole new meaning, and I think now that we see the road ahead of us, I look at our marriage and I look at you add three kids to it, and I used to think that always protecting myself from the sudden changes was like the best way to operate as a husband. You know, like as a father, I was like avoiding sometimes like the changes and the, you know, the like ups and downs of life. And now I've come to realize and embracing, like, I think from my own personality, like, what is constantly happening, you know, that God is changing us and moving us and big and small, you know. I mean, for us, you guys might look at us and say, well, you live in another country and a change is quite drastic, but it has not been that way in a very small way. It's been like things that clearly are showing up on our radar that mean a lot, that where God is getting our attention. So how do I handle it and how do we handle it? I told someone in these Q&As, you know, when we break up into groups, I was like, we like try to laugh about it. And I really mean that because Liz and I can get super serious in the moment. But at the end of the day, we know like neither of us are trying to win. So we start laughing and making fun of each other and making fun of the situation, you know? I mean, the craziest things have happened. And I don't know, I was never like that before. And now going through different moves and changes and, you know, whether it's the weather or it's the country being open or not, has been like a time to just straight up laugh and look at God and be like, what are you trying to do? And I think that's my answer. It's very simple. It's been not like, let's not try to protect my family from these changes. Let's just embrace them and go for it. So that's for me, and that's for Liz and I. We've like, I don't know. I think we've grown up together a little bit, like before this, developing that relationship where we could just kind of laugh at each other. So it's really helped. So that's my answer to the question. Justin, Pastor Justin, no.
I think you guys laugh a lot too, right? Yeah. This is obviously like directed at us because we unexpectedly had to come back from Izmir. And I was just saying to someone recently that I think we might be getting better at it, at trusting God. Mm-hmm. Because this one was not as upsetting. Although it, you know, it's still like you get into your groove and everybody likes to stay in their groove. So, but I think we often really love to point out like the good things that God has done in our lives. And when those good things happen, we're quick to point them out. And then when something unexpected happens, we don't attribute that to God's work as well. And I think we've seen enough times in our lives to say that God works in all of these things. So the miraculous story that you love to tell is a good way to be reminded of God's faithfulness, but also the way that he uses the unexpected things. You have to like remind yourself of his faithfulness through those things too. And I think we're getting a little bit better at that. This is like our, I don't know how many times we've had our life change unexpectedly, but and we also really love to encourage that in our kids, and that the only constant in your life is change and God, you know? And so they won't be so, hopefully they won't be so taken off guard by change in their life too. So we really try to embrace it and have fun in all the uncertainty that is life. So, yeah.
Thank you. I don't know if anybody else wants to answer or has any input, or I can ask another question. The question was how, like, trusting God when the plan changes and he reroutes you.
Oh, goodness. Bear with me. I might look like a deer in headlights a lot. I can talk about babies, diapers, and cleaning toilets. I'm your girl, but but this is definitely interesting. But I think the change question, like, I think knowing, like, change is going to happen, I think God has a plan for our lives that can change every day. Like, the plan. So I think if you just know that change is going to happen, like, that's just an automatic. And it can actually be something, like, to enjoy it. You can, like, have joy in it. It's something to look forward to. If I have too much of the same all the time, then I get kind of, I don't know. But, I mean, change is going to happen, and to be okay with it. If you're doing it together, it can actually be, it can be something to look forward to. I don't know. That may be a really horrible way to answer that question.
Yeah, so change. I don't know about you guys, but last night we were sitting at the tables and these questions were coming to us, and this is so off my track of how I'm wired. But they're good questions to, because we just live life and we make do with what we have. And so it's a good exercise, but I'm terrible at answering these questions. I just make stuff up on the spot. Hopefully it sounds good. okay, so change. I think the will of God, here's one thing, maybe just as a family, we know that we want to serve God, but we don't know what it is, per se. And people can say, well, what's the will of God for your life? And, I mean, for us, we've both been, we don't really know. I mean, all we know is what is in front of us right now. And I think that's how God leads us. He'll give us one thing to do, and this is what you're going to do, and then he'll lead us to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. And it's not our will, even for a church or a ministry. It's like, okay, I could come up with my own vision of what I think it should be. But actually, I don't really know what the vision is other than what's in front of me today and what God's called us to do. And that can have many different changes to it. But at the same time, it's always God's spirit. It's always God's work. It's exciting. Thank God we have a God that switches it up on us to keep us on our toes. And you can just kind of relax in the fact that is he going to provide for us tomorrow, in a month, in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years? Absolutely. He's going to provide for us. And that's a fun thing looking back. Faith is like you look back on it and you see how God has provided for you every step of the way. And you can just depend upon the fact that, hey, he's done it for the last 10 years, 15 years. What do I really have to worry about next year or in 2 years or in 5 years? I don't really have much to worry about. He's going to just have us in the right spot, doing the right thing, providing the grace for us to be able to accomplish whatever he wants us to accomplish. So that's fun. That's fun living. This whole thing is all grace. Anyways, it's like God doesn't need any of us to do anything. And if you get thinking that you get too serious about what we're doing and stressed out, and it's like you got to take a step back and be like, hey, wait a second. This is all grace. Like maybe he's pushing me into the deep end, but he's going to teach me how to swim there. And let's just have fun doing it. Pastor Stan told us on the mission field, if you're not having fun, go home. And I like that. If you're not having joy in what you're doing in the work of God, go home. And so I was like, all right, I guess I got to go home. Not having the best time right now, but I got to find out a way to do it. So
that was good. Thank you. A question in the app is, how do you fight? This is for anybody who wants to answer. How do you fight and communicate disagreements properly, having difficult conversations with one another? Who is first?
So let's start. I want to go back to the change thing just a second. Remember when we got married, we were using dial phones and 45 records, you know, and change just occurred. And now you look at it, it changes at such a fast pace, right? Back then, things moved a lot slower and change is happening so quickly. So you obviously, the adjustment to change is happening so much quicker. Like, you know, you get a new iPhone and then tomorrow there's another one, right? So you got to get, you know, it's like, oh, that's already outdated, right? But the one thing that is constant is change in God, right? And I love what you said there. That was beautiful. So what's the question again, Ryan? Because Justin wants to answer it for you.
How do you fight and communicate disagreements? Properly have difficult conversations with one another.
So I think the first thing is, you know, when there's a disagreement, is communication, right? We can sometimes agree to disagree. Like, she might have a different thought than I have, and we can agree to disagree. But I think, you know, one of the things is very important that when you approach your spouse about a disagreement, that you've gone to God first. I think so many people react out of an emotion or out of a situation without taking it to God first. And I think that's imperative that we do that, because God might be trying to show us something in the disagreement. So I think that you go to God first. Then the second thing I think is, you have to approach it filled with the Spirit, right? Because otherwise what you're going to approach them with is your flesh. And you're going to have flesh versus flesh, and that's never good, right? So you have to approach what it is Spirit-filled. And then I think you have to try to take the emotion out of it. It's interesting because when we had our Christian school, and we would go through correction with our kids in the Christian school, we would always give them this opportunity to correct themselves within the room. And then if they didn't, then we would take them outside of the room and talk to them and say, okay, now do you want to correct yourself and return to the fellowship of the classroom? And if that didn't work, then there was the next step, which was obviously some form of discipline with the principal. But in that, we always prayed with them. And I think when there's a disagreement, I think, you know, first you go to God and then you go to God together, right? And say, you know, help us see what the, you know, show us, you know, because we're just dumb Christians, right? We're dumb sheep and we just need led. And so sometimes you have to go to God and get that leading. So I think that's a couple practical examples.
I argue well. Okay. I just, the thing that came to my mind was when we disagree and argue, I think sometimes it can cause a place where you could be in the flesh, and then you're at the end of the day, and it always kind of comes down to the end of the day, in my opinion, because sometimes, you know, life can be so busy. You have kids, you have a job, you have other things happening. So maybe your disagreement happened in the morning or in the afternoon, but by the end of the day, it's always been my desire that I would just be in front of Liz going like, you know, I love you. And I always think about the verse in Ephesians, I think it's chapter 3 or 4, where it says, don't let the sun set on your anger. You know, like, don't ever go to bed at night with that anger in your heart about a disagreement, you know, because, yeah, we're in the flesh, okay, but there's still time to, like make this happen. Like, there's still time to go ahead and press on, you know, and I think that's kind of, you know, this idea of just, like, there's hope on the other side. But if you were to go to bed every night, just never kind of, like, putting an end to it and, like, resolving it and coming together, getting in each other's faces, and I think it just was really unhealthy. So it's in my heart that I would never go and lay my head to bed and put my head on the pillow and just close my eyes with that in my heart. And I think in today's age, I just thought about one thing is just watching TV. Like, it's just a distraction from what can be an amazing opportunity, you know, where a disagreement goes to an amazing spiritual conversation. And, you know, I think cultivating that disagreement, talking, discussing element at night is so beautiful. Was it Pastor Schaller that said, like, Pat, you know, Billy Graham just stared at his wife, you know, like, he didn't need a TV. And I love that. And, you know, when we moved to Turkey, like, we didn't have a TV for, like, the first couple of years. And, like, Turkish people were like, well, what is wrong with you? I was like, I just didn't have time, you know, to be honest. It wasn't like, I have a TV. I bought a new TV, actually. We love TVs. But the point was just that there was so much more, like, we were talking about. And sometimes it was arguing. But at the end of the day, we never let anything get in the way of just being like, let's like either close this or like pray together. We'd find something where it wasn't like, I'm going to go to bed now, you know? So that's been a huge help to us.
I really do think he does a great job of arguing well because he's careful with his words, and I am not as careful with my words. Yeah. The Lord has given me a sharp tongue. Yeah, that's a Turkish word for being like quick-witted, but it's sharp tongue. And I was like, that's true. It's sharp. that's something I actively have to be aware of. And one of the things that I've gotten better at doing sometimes is when I'm upset about something and, like you said, when the emotion is really high and I've got all the things I want to say, you know, and you've got like a little script and you're like adding to it and you're like, oh, I'm going to also say this and I'm going to, and you're like writing, it's like, does anyone else do that? Oh, thank God. Okay. A few of us. So I have learned that, first of all, if in our situation, I'm home with the kids, so when he comes home from work, I have learned to give him space, even if there are things that I feel need to be addressed between us or something that's happened that I need to get off my chest. And that's very hard for me, but I think it's really healthy, not only because it is being compassionate towards him to not attack him as he arrives home, but it also gives me time to let the emotion settle, bring it to God, roll it over a few times, look at it different ways, consider different perspectives, you know, hopefully see God's perspective in it. And there actually have been a lot of times where the thing disappeared during that time, where by the time, you know, he was home, if I had done that, I didn't feel the need to bring it to him because I had kind of settled it with God. And that's not always the case. Of course, sometimes you just really need to, like, hash things out. But I've been known to send an email or two. Yeah. Right? Because you can backspace when you're emailing. You can't do that when you're speaking. So that's maybe a helpful suggestion. Yeah. I like to write things out. And then I do have a lot of those emails that were never sent. They're in the draft. I'm waiting. I'm like, but yeah, really, like, giving things some time is just wisdom, and we see it throughout the Bible. And being slow to speak is something that for some of us doesn't come naturally, but I have really seen the fruit of it. And then when we do discuss and address, I've already considered it from a few perspectives, and I've asked God to help, and so it is a different discussion. And sometimes it doesn't even get to the level of argument, you know. It's just me expressing what I'm feeling, you know, and it has a completely different tone. So, I think space and time are like your best friends when it comes to disagreements.
When you were saying about not letting the sun go down, he is so funny. I used to get mad a lot in the beginning of our marriage, and I would throw a fit and then go sleep on the couch, and he would crawl on the couch with me. Okay? We don't fit on the couch. Like, and it would irritate me so bad. And he said, I didn't get married to go to bed by myself. So in 31 years, we have never gotten mad and slept in a separate room or nothing, because I know he's going to end up on that couch or in that other bed, and I'm not going there. And one other thing I was thinking is, I think a lot of times I don't think we fight as much as we used to because we communicate more. And I think a lot of times the reason fights start comes from a misunderstanding. And the misunderstanding comes from a lack of communication. And sometimes as women, we just want to be heard. And if we have been home all day with the kids, and, you know, being home with the kids sometimes can feel like not really rewarding, you know, and you feel like you're not really contributing, even though you have one of the most amazing, precious jobs, most important jobs of anybody, being home with those children, but you still feel like you're not being heard, not being appreciated, not contributing, because I went through that for a little bit. And then when they come home, you just want to, like, puke on them. And I think that you just want them to listen, and you just want them to know that they appreciate you, because sometimes you don't feel like you're seen or heard. And we just want to be, as women, seen and heard. And if we communicate and tell them that, or they pick up on that, because they're not always mind readers and vice versa, it eliminates a lot of arguments. So I hope that made sense.
Yes, those were good answers. And it kind of is a good segue into the next question from the app. And the question is, how can you be a supportive pastor's wife with daily life challenges like kids, work, social life, etc.? This is more for the women, I guess, to answer. I mean, I guess doesn't have to just be a pastor's wife, I guess. Maybe if you're like...
Okay. it speaks to what you were saying about valuing your role. We had a period in our marriage where I used to think every time my husband came home that he didn't think I had done enough, that I was lacking, that he was seeing all the things that I hadn't done. and it was brutal. And then I would resent him. These are all imaginary things that he's not thinking. But I would resent him, and I would feel insecure and not loved. And those were things that I had to take to God, because he was always very clear that, you know, he valued what I did. He loved me. Those, in his mind, were not in question, and yet they were in mine. And when we moved to Izmir, our life rhythms and everything just totally changed. But it was a great opportunity to kind of reset my mind and redefine the value in what I'm doing every day. Like, for example, when he would, you know, go to the church to lead the midweek Bible study, and I would stay home and feed the kids and put them to bed and watch TV. And then he would come home, you know, and I could easily feel like, well, he just, you know, did all this stuff of eternal value and discipling and teaching, and I just, like, made another meal, you know, read another book, like, sliced another apple. And God really just, like, healed me. And I think he used a lot of people also to show me just the incredible value that there is in what we're doing. And as a wife, I really enjoy thinking about how I can be a help. And it's not like doing housework. It's like, how can I encourage my husband in what he's called to do? How can I meet a need that's unmet? And that looks so different for each one of us, but we're called to be, you know, it says in Genesis, a helpmate is, I love talking about the meaning of that word. The Hebrew is ezer, and it's the word for helper. And it's used twice to describe women, and then it's used 19 times to describe God. And as women, whether you're married or not, but especially in a marriage, we're called to help our husbands the way that God helps when the battle is being lost, and God was our help in time of trouble. It's often used in a military setting, the word. And I love that, because life is a battle, and family life is often very, very much feels like a battlefield with kids and all of those things. And to think of my place and my role is that I am coming to the rescue of my husband makes me feel pretty good about myself. Because that's what God does, and that I'm a reflection of that in my marriage is deeply encouraging to me, and I know, of course, that it is an actual help to my husband. So that's the way I usually think about how I can be supportive, is in that light, through that context.
Oh my goodness. So he tells me the best way to help him is just to be supportive. I feel sometimes like I need to be doing more than that. But I think what Liz said was really good, because I think what happens with marriages and families and in general, we have, like, there's spiritual warfare going on that we can't, like, see with our eyes, but it's definitely going on. And so I think what happens is we can get a lot of thoughts in our mind that are not true. They're actually, like, lies that are being spoken to us for a reason, because we can try to be not on the same team and feel like we need to be in competition with each other. But what we're really in competition with is Satan, so we can fight for our marriage and for our families so that we can win. You know, with God, if Satan hates marriages and families that bring glory to God, and that's why that's happening in our minds. Satan and demons, as that kind of sounds creepy, but it's really happening, puts lies in our minds so that we can believe it. And if we believe those lies that are not true, then we can take that out on our children, our husbands. And so I'm trying to get better at seeing it like we're a team, we're on the same team. I'm not a basketball player, I was a cheerleader, but but a basketball team, you know, it's a team sport. If everybody's mad at each other and not getting along and you're competing with each other, then you're probably not going to win the game. And then if you keep losing the games every time just because you're like mad at each other that you're not winning or you're mad at the coach, then you're probably, somebody's going to want to quit the team. And then you don't even have a full team. And then you can actually win the game because you're all supporting each other and you're on the same page, and the victory is winning the battle over Satan is really what it is. And it's a real thing because some things can start like simple, like you feel like he doesn't care about me. Just like the lies, you're believing the lies. And if you can just recognize like what's really going on behind the scenes and see it for what it is, like actually that's not really true, that's Satan. He's trying to win the game, and that's just not going to happen. So my mom, she would tell me, and Kathy Grenwald, I think I know she's in here somewhere, but you talk out loud, like Satan and the demons, they can mess with your mind, but they can't read your, you know, they like if you talk out loud, like the blood of Jesus Christ can like clear that. And so my mom would always be like, the blood of Jesus. Like, and like when you're a little kid, that seems really weird to like see your mom say those things. And now I do it. And now my son is almost 2 years old and he raises his hand, which means praise the Lord. And it's like children are so little and they see that, and you can actually be a family on the same team and win the game so that you can glorify God, and then your children can do the same thing. So the whole thing, I guess, is just recognizing that everything's a lie, like those screwed up thoughts in your mind. It happens, I think, with the wives and the moms, because if you believe those lies, it just can go downhill from there. But he tells me the best way to help him is just support him. And I think if we both feel like we're on the same team, we're doing this together, it may not be like, you might not be doing anything physically outward, but you're just like doing the dishes and you're praying. Like that's all I know how to do is just talk to God and admit that I'm just like a really weak person, because that's how I feel a lot. But just supporting each other and I'm working on that myself.
I think Kathy Grin. Is she here?
Yeah, where is Kathy?
Is Kathy here? She's not here.
What?
She's like my hero.
Where is Kathy?
And I never knew her until Dakota came into the Wistera family, and I'm so grateful because when John took over the ministry, and it totally changed the course of our life, because I was retiring in Florida, okay, whatever. That's a whole nother, that's Kim tells all kind of thing. But what was amazing is I text her almost out of fear, and she sent this message back, it's still on my phone, and she said, your first job as a pastor's wife is to your husband. It's not to the body, it's to your husband. And that released me so much, because we can believe that we need to be in 100 million different places. And I didn't have small children. You know, if I had small children, I would be with my children. But she was like, because I felt like I had to do everything, because Brenda was amazing. And I'm not saying that I'm not like comparing, I'm just saying that Satan can get in there and it can make you feel like you got to do everything. And you know what? Everybody has a portion. And as long as you're busy doing everything, other people aren't going to be stepping up. So, yeah. So that's what I've figured out. I'm his helpmate.
Okay, so how, in the mission that you guys have as families and a couple. And when you include, you throw children into the mix, how do you include them into that vision and mission? Like, what is their place? Like, you, as adults, you kind of know your place in the work. Like, okay, I'm doing this, I'm leading Bible studies, and I'm the pastor of this church. But then you have your little children, or your maybe grown children, that are, like, looking at you, trying to find their place in it. Maybe they don't even recognize, like, if they're really little, like, what's going on? But how do you include them in the call that you guys have?
They don't have a choice. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah, I mean, just what it is.
How do you include them?
I mean, we grew up this way. I mean, it's not foreign to us so much. Yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, you find that, like, as a husband, you find that your wife is really looking for you to lead her. And you have to have a vision as a man. And that's what God has given you, and then she's a help in that. With kids, I mean, yeah, they just have to go along with the ride. I mean, they love it. And we grew up, all of us up here, right here, we grew up on the mission field, and we grew up in the church. And I mean, thank God. Isn't that amazing? We have so much to be thankful for. So many people that have impacted our lives in immense ways. And just to think that our kids, what better place? I mean, are they going to get that if they're in a little, you know, they're playing travel soccer? Like, maybe. No, they're not.
No.
They're not going to get that same level of investment, love, direction, wisdom. So, yeah, I mean, our kids are small. They're going to be 5 and 2, so. But, yeah, no choice.
This is a good question. I grew up as a missionary kid, and now I have missionary kids. And I would say one of the things is that they're not missionaries. So I don't expect anything from them besides that they're my children. They're not called to be missionaries. They're my children, and I'm called, and we are called to be missionaries. So I've had some interesting conversations with my eldest is 9, and then 7 and 5, and they love their family. They love their cousins. They have cousins here, and they have cousins in Budapest. So wherever they are lacking something in terms of those relationships. And I've had my daughter say to me in tears, like, I just want to live in one place and never go anywhere. And that, like, hits you in the chest, you know? But, like, an hour later, she's like, fine. And you're still like, oh, my gosh. And she's fine. She's, like, over it. But one of the things that we love talking about with our kids is the why. Like, we want them to understand why they left, you know, their favorite tree and Chick-fil-A and their cousins, because these are the things that, like, they've left. We want them to understand why. And we make it clear that when they're older, they get to make their own choices. But like you said, right now they're in our family, and we know what's best. My daughter just recently overheard me, like, I'm very sarcastic, and I was joking with a friend about how I'm like, yeah, I've, like, yanked my son in and out of, like, 3 schools in 2 years, and he's probably going to need counseling. And I was, like, totally, you know, just, like, joking. I mean, hopefully I'm joking, but she heard it, and, like, 2 days later, she asked me, and I was like, Mom, I heard you say that you're taking God enough school, and, like, and I just was very firm with her, and I said, first of all, that was an adult conversation, and you don't understand the nuance of sarcasm yet. So that's why we don't eavesdrop. And then I said, do you think that the decisions I make for you are the best choice for you? And she was like, yes. And I was like, okay. That's over then. So I like having conversations. My parents were always big on telling me the why, and, like, they encourage us to ask questions. And so I really I loved that because there was a sense that I was heard and I was cared for as a child, even though we were making sacrifices as a family that maybe I wouldn't have chosen for myself. And I want to do the same for our kids, but at the end of the day, like, we have it settled in our hearts that this is our calling, and we do have this vision. And we love to share it with them and talk about it and reinforce and remind them of the why behind what we're doing. And but at the same time, like, it's, you know, they're not missionaries, so I really try not to put too much, you know, on them in that sense. I want them to just grow and be loved and be able to ask questions and just be in that kind of nurturing environment while being in a different country in very unusual, unsettled circumstances. So our family is like the core that's like unshakable, and everything else can be shaken, but like we're okay. So, yeah.
I think the question for me is like what Pastor Justin said, just like, you know, he heard on the mission field, if you're not having fun, like, go back. And for me, thinking about my kids, I was like, guys, we are going to have so much fun. You have no idea. Like, this is the best life in the whole world. It's the best kept secret, and I'll prove it to you. You know, so for me, I've always felt like it's my job to be like, this is it. Like, this is, we're like, we're only going up. And I think we have learned more about cultivating this, you know, asking the why and showing the joy and the love in this, and even in the tough times. And I just feel that it's our job to show them Christ in this world. And there's no better way to do it than to actually, like, take them along, like you said, you know, like they have no choice. Like, let's go. I'm going to show you something that is a secret, something that is hidden, something that the world doesn't have their hands on. And it's just really cool to discover that in your life. You know, you go, you know, it's not just my job. It's not just this house we have. It's not any of these possessions, but there is something beyond it. And yeah, it does come across as like you don't have a choice, but I've also felt like I'm almost obligated to show them the beauty of it all and to have fun in it all. So it's cool. It's like, I think we can take it as the question as like a challenge. Like, can we show them? Can we show them like passing this on, like you were saying, like we grew up in it. Now are we going to pass it on? Like, it is. It's our job to do it. And like here we go. Let's do it.
It's still on, right? Okay. So this is just what our life is. We're just available to what God has for us, and that's what gives us joy. Like, that's what keeps us rolling. Like, this isn't like a duty. Like, I'm just so thankful that the Lord, I feel like the Lord is just with us. But I can only just go by memory, like from when I was a little kid. We weren't like on the mission field, but you are. If you're a believer, you are on the mission field wherever you are. But my mom is like the most amazing missionary I know. She's like, I went to Bible college and it was changed my life, but most of what I know about being a missionary is actually from watching my mom. Because I'll tell you what, she is like, she does shopping outreach just like all the time. No, I mean, everywhere she goes, that's what we call it, shopping outreach. The grocery store, Starbucks, like the drive, wherever she is, where she sees somebody that she, like, it's not a family member, it's just someone she's meet. I mean, you would think it is her family member. By the way, I was at Wegmans one time, and there was a woman cleaning the precious woman cleaning off the tables, and my mom just goes and gives her the gospel, and the lady just starts crying, and my mom's like holding this woman, and the lady's laying on my mom's shoulder, and I'm just watching, and Millie was there too, actually. This was pretty recent, but that's how my mom has been my entire life. I've watched my mom like soul win to so many people. I mean, whoever she meets, they get the gospel. And I mean the full-on gospel. Like, when you're little, it was maybe a little bit embarrassing at times. And now it's totally not. But that's, I guess now I'm turning into my mom. I feel like it. But everything I know in that is just by watching my mom. I'm just so thankful for it, and it's not anything to be embarrassed about. Like, this is just what our life is. That's what our life is about, is just giving the gospel and loving people. It's about people. But I think sometimes your kids might, like, when I got older, like, became a teenager, I had to come to a decision where, what do I believe? Do I believe for myself, and why? It had to be, like, real in my life, not because someone told me. I was, like, pretty stubborn, and I like to know I'm making decisions based on, like, I had to find out for myself or find out the hard way. But I'll tell you what, like, if you have children, like, don't hold back. Like, they're watching you. They're little sponges, and they can become, you know, missionaries. You don't have to. Wherever you are is the mission field if you have Christ living inside of you. And it's really amazing. I'm just so thankful for my parents. I don't think that they're here right now, but I'm just so thankful because they're the reason I'm here. They have an amazing prayer life too. And I always say all I know how to do is pray, but I think because my mom is also the biggest prayer warrior I know. But all of this is just me being a little child remembering all of this and watching this. So I'm just shouting a holler at all you parents out there who have grown children. And I know there's people like Kaylin Wistera and Liz Orsi. And because of their parents, Debbie and Kathy, and just different people, like, you women are so amazing. And your children, we're watching your children that are just killing it. You got Kaylin and Dakota speaking in Sailors Union, and he did a message one time recently that really had an impact on my life, you know. And I know that they're not kids, they're adults now, they're married, but they had to come to a place in their life where they were raised in a really a healthy environment, home, where they had amazing parents, but they had to come to a place where they had to decide what they believe and why for themselves. That had to be real to them. So you parents out there, just keep rolling, because you may like have like a rebellious teenager at some point, or they might stay rebellious for a long time, but just keep praying for them. Don't stop praying for them. I think I went off topic, possibly.
It's okay.
That was good. A question in the app. It says, how can someone love, encourage, and support their spouse when they, either person in the relationship, are in a season of disconnection from God? How can someone love, encourage, and support their spouse when they are in a season of disconnection from God?
So if he's has a disconnection with God, how can I support them? Or I'm the one that has a disconnection, so how am I going to support him?
I think it says either person, but I think that it's probably, how do I love my spouse when they are in a disconnection with God? I think
you should answer this.
I think you should. Unconditionally. That's it. I mean, you just love them unconditionally, right? And even when they might, I mean, think about God, like, he loves us unconditionally even when we don't love him back. And even when we, like, kick and scream and want to tell him that we hate him, he still loves us. And even when we feel like we're disconnected from him, he is still faithful to us. And so that's the beauty of it, is that in that relationship, you're representing God to that person that's disconnected. And you just try to be available. You love them. You pray for them. But they've got to go through their own thing, you know, just as well as I got to go through my own thing. And so you let them go through their thing. And, you know, and you just have to trust God for them. It goes back to what we were saying this morning about fear. Like, I was very fearful of what was going to happen in our marriage. And yet, even through that fear, I continued to trust God. Like, God, she's yours. You know, she's yours and you got to do it. And I can't control her, right? Only your love will draw her. And it's not about control. It's about love. And it's about unconditional love of God.
That just triggered something when he said that. Unconditional love can also be not saying anything. Because as women, we react. And I remember opening the door when we would fight and I'd be like, I'm going to say one last thing. And he'd be like, that's enough. But then I'd have to open the door just so I could say something and shut it quick, you know, so I could have the last word. And I've learned over the years that I don't have to have the last word. You know, God has the last word. And to say nothing is sometimes what God wants us to do. Like when somebody's going through something, have you ever felt like they come to you for counseling or they come to you for advice and you don't have anything? And sometimes Satan projections can come like, you should have an answer, you should know this. But sometimes the answer is nothing, because only God can fix things. We just point them to God and trust God for their life. And really, it's the same way with our children. It's hard as parents because you want to manipulate, and I did, and fix, and whatever. But you come finally to a realization that it's ultimately God. And just sometimes, not as women, just keeping our mouth shut with can be very hard.
You know, it's interesting about that when you said about slamming the door. Do you ever, like, as a spouse, right, you know what buttons to push in your spouse? You know, like she could say something that gets to me, right? And I know exactly what button to push. Now the question is, am I going to push the button or on? You know, am I going to poke the bear or aren't I? Right? Yeah. And so I think sometimes it's interesting because as you grow, like it's all she has to say is you act just like your mother, and I can feel the blood go right up in my face. Like that's all she's got to say. Like and it's going to happen, right? So it's like she's learned, and I've learned, like we don't push the button. You try to avoid the button, right? Because when you push the button, you know you're going to get the reaction. Right? So that's why you push the button, because you want the reaction, right? Because now you said something to me, so now guess what? I'm going to push the button, right? Yeah, it's kind of like the panic button. You push it. So, I mean, I think that's even goes back to that question about fighting. Like, you know, that's the thing that you find in each other. And I think over time you learn that it's better just to not push the button. Don't push the button. There's not a need to push the button. You know, take what has been said and really contemplate it and try to understand that perspective. So,
he just said, be careful.
There's the button.
I literally forgot the question now. Oh, a disconnect from God. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, as the woman, there's a different dynamic, right? Like, we often respond to our husbands, and in an ideal, healthy marriage, that can be a really beautiful thing. But if your husband's in a funk, because I don't know if you know this, husbands, but you get in funks. Did you know that? I don't know if they know, babe. I don't think they know. It was really quiet. So when your husband gets in a funk, you have like a choice to make. And it's, are you going to respond and join him in that? Or are you just going to look to God and find your peace and your contentment and your satisfaction from God? And I think having having a relationship with God that is not necessarily dependent on your husband is very important. And it's why I always say to single women that you only have one Savior, and do not expect to find a man who will be your Savior, that our needs are really met in God. And I loved, I mean, I said that to you earlier. What you said was so amazing. Like, to be content in God means that when your husband disappoints you, you're okay. And we've had those times, not necessarily long periods of time, but there's just times when I can see my husband doesn't have a lot to offer me in that moment. And that's okay, because I'm okay. Is this what you meant by being careful? It is good, yeah. I mean, we're all married here, so you've been disappointed by your spouse, I'm pretty sure. And so it's encouraging to know, first of all, that you're not the only one being disappointed by your spouse. And that, thank God, we have an endless source of unconditional love that is found in God. And when a marriage is healthy and beautiful, it is an incredible reflection of that. But we are not always in a perfectly healthy place. And that's when we need to remind ourselves to look to the true source and be encouraged in that. And then you know how to serve your spouse when they're disconnected. And it's usually, I mean, for me, just like if I'm in that place, knowing my husband's okay and he's not like in the pit with me is good, actually. That is comforting. I feel more settled knowing that. And I think vice versa. If he's struggling through something and I'm okay, and I have my own joy and my own contentment, then it brings a stability to your marriage that you don't need to both be drowning, you know? So, yeah. Is that okay?
Just so
careful.
No.
She was careful.
She was. You were careful. It's just, I just think this is true, because, like, what she said is true. Like, we get into funks, you know? All of us, like, get into different things in life, highs and lows. And it's like, I feel like if we can just understand this for a moment, that like, it is so important that your vertical is just everything in that moment, that it really causes you to not be reactionary. And what I think would only make things worse. And it I think in this world, we're kind of like taught that your significant other is really the one that kind of bails you out. And that can be the case sometimes in your marriage. But ultimately, if you're not taught, and we are, that God is the source, and this unconditional love is, you know, like you said, it's just lights out the best 100% the answer to the situation, then it causes, like, you know, this quietness, this confidence. And yeah, funks are real. Like we were reading today, we had our Zoom for our church in Turkey, and we read Abraham's life and just how right away there's a famine and he makes a decision to go to Egypt. And I just was thinking, like, famines, like, it's just, I have a famine every day. Like, our life is a famine. And it's when we wake up in the morning, what do you do with your famine? You know, you gotta feed it. You got to find a source. You're so hungry. And sometimes the funks are longer than other times. You know, sometimes, you know, the anger, the sun sets. And then what are you going to do the next day, you know? And I think it is these times where we learn with each other, like, I can rebound from this right away. And or she can. And I'm just waiting. Like you said, I love that. You're just waiting for it. And there it is again. Surely, again and again, we're just growing stronger in that.
Thank you. This question is about finances. The question is, how should the finances be managed as a married couple? Do you have a joint account, two separately distributed accounts from a joint account to respect each other's freedom of spending? What is the most biblical way? Should I repeat the question?
Just straight answer would be, we got married and it was like, let's put our accounts together because that means there's more money in the account. And I don't know, I was pretty confident that Lizzie was not going to like take that money and go anywhere with it. She was pretty frugal and I was like happy about that. So it's never been a topic of ours. And then as far as running the finances, I think, I don't know. We said there's auto pay now, so I kind of try not to look at it. I just am like not looking at things. So I'm trying to be like relational. I just think it's money. It depends. I think for us in being in Turkey, we have another currency and we live a different way. When we come back to America, we realize how expensive things are. It's crazy. And we look at each other and we're like, wow, we have to be careful. We have to be wise. When we're in Turkey, we're kind of like, soup's on us. You know, like, who wants some bread or like, you know, who wants a Coca-Cola? You know, like, I'll buy you one. So I think we started that way when we first got married and we haven't changed. You know, Pastor Lange always thought I'd take his name into the family, which was like a joke. I was like, no, she's taking my name and she's coming under, you know, we're going to become one. So let's become one bank account. So I guess that's my answer. That wasn't really an answer, but I mean, as far as finances go, that's we've gone back and forth in different areas as far as making decisions and or like calling like the shots, whether it's like balancing or managing it. So it's been a mix.
Yeah, for sure.
I know. This is a subject that can be very heartbreaking when you have people that you know in your life that the finances aren't combined and they're married, and there's husbands out there that are watching their wives struggle emotionally, physically, to the point that can put them into the hospital. And I see this so many times. I have one specific person and one is my sister. And it breaks your heart because to me, he is my head. He has to look over and watch over me for my emotional state also. Just like the pastor looks over his church, the husband should be looking over his wife. And if you see your wife wearing herself out or killing herself and you're not helping her, to me is like, and I don't want to condemn anybody, but it's so foreign to me in my head. It's like, I want to, and I've said this, like just recently somebody went into the hospital and I text the husband. And maybe I shouldn't have done that, but I text them and I was like, I just want you to know that your wife is killing herself at her job. And this is ridiculous. They're taking advantage of her. She's jumping through hoops, blah, blah, blah. Of course, I didn't get a response back. I didn't expect one, but I just had to say that because sometimes I think it can be even a blind spot, you know, and they just don't, maybe they've never had the relationship with their wife that they've told her maybe what to do. Or instructed her. Instead of saying told, you could say instructed her. And it really is heartbreaking to watch that go on. And so in our finances, they've always been combined. He's always made more money than me. And we talk about everything. There's nothing purchased that we don't talk about. And he takes my what I have to say into consideration, and I take what he has to say in consideration. And to me, I think that's respect. And it has, I mean, yeah, finances has always been an issue, though, trust me, because of the way I was raised. Money was always more important than anything else, material things. So, but now I can live in a box. That's where I'm at. So, anyhow, but yeah, so I don't know if that would, that helps, but I don't know if, I hope that ministered to somebody, because it is heart-wrenching to see, and it happens in so many, and it could be fear. Maybe something happened in your past. Somebody wiped you out financially. I don't know. So many different reasons. You want to be in control. I don't know, but I just know if you see your wife struggling, you need to step in and be the head that God has placed you over her to protect her.
Yeah. I think too, I think too, a combined account is important because it leads to transparency in the relationship, right? If you operate under separate accounts, and it, I mean, I think that can sometimes be dangerous in that, you know, I think it leads to transparency. And, you know, I've learned a long time ago, her money's her money and my money's her money, so I don't have any money anyhow.
He don't even get allowance.
I was just thinking that question, there's so much behind that question. And I think that's really more, it's the root of the question there. If, you know, if you want to combine them because you want to have control over your spouse, that's a red flag. If you want to keep them separate because you want to keep something away from your spouse, that's also a red flag. So I think for each situation here, it's different. You know, people make different amounts of money. Some, you know, one person's home, one person's not. You know, there's different seasons even where, you know, you go back to work. I'm not working right now. All I do is spend. That's all I do. I need that song to just
come. We came back a month ago, and I said, you're just spending money.
Yeah, I mean, I think for our, like you said, our situation is I grew up a missionary kid, so I don't spend money. Like, I'm always like, so we don't have that issue. But I know of, you know, couples where one likes to spend money. And when you're spending somebody else's money, and that becomes a tension, and unspoken resentment could build. Or so I think that's really the more important thing, is the unspoken thing underneath that question. And it's probably different for all of us. Like in ours, it would be more like me not feeling worthy to spend money because I don't contribute, right? So that could be what I would want to discuss with my husband and have that discussion, and it would be look very different for each situation here. But I mean, what you said is so good. Like, you need transparency and respect, because money comes and goes, and you're going to have seasons where it's abundant and you're going to have seasons where it's not. And I think just to be aware of any excess in your life as a couple is good, because we really enjoy being generous with our money when we can be. And that's only possible if you are aware of the excess in your life, and you can, you know, as a team, make a decision how you want to use your finances, whether it's supporting a cause that you care about or helping a friend in need or whatever it would be. But finances are just like another amazing way that you can be a team. And so I think whatever's behind that question is really the one worth asking.
I mean,
you're the spender.
Huge spender, big time. No, I'm a squirrel. Squirrel. Yeah, I think one thing, I mean, maybe this can segue into another topic, just in the sense of ministry and then making a living. You know, that is a balance that you have to learn. It's like a little dance that you have to learn how to do, because we both work full time. And we have two kids, and we're both self-employed. And then we have the ministry. And there's no one telling you what to do. So those decisions, in the sense of how much you work, We both kind of grew up in the sense that when you work and you start something, like if you start a business, what do you want to do? You want to have the business grow. I mean, you want to make money, right? I mean, isn't that the whole point of starting a business?
Yeah.
It's like you want the business to grow and you want it to thrive as well as it can. But when you're in the ministry, that should be your focus. So for the first, I mean, I've been at Fed Hill for, I think this is going on 7 years. The first 4 years, I struggled with this very much so, because I could work as much as I wanted to, and I could make as much as I wanted to. But then you realize you only have so much energy, and you only have so much attention. And then you realize you're doing so many different things, but you're not doing anything very well. So then you have to kind of narrow it down in the sense of what is our life really about. And really, I think what happens is, and this is funny for both of us because we weren't like this early on, but we have kind of developed systems because we realize that if you don't have a system in place, then you're going to expend energy, more energy than you need to spend on details of life, would burn out more energy and more focus on what's important. So finances is one of those things. We've gotten better at it. But I would just say to, you know, all of us or young people that are getting into the ministry, no one's going to tell you what to do, you know. So you really have to, I think a shift in our life was when we said, what's our focal point? Our focal point is the ministry. And you think also, where do I get refreshed the most? Because if you're working and all your attention goes to your clients, and then you come home and your attention goes to your wife, and then you have kids and your attention goes to your kids, when you get to church, then all of a sudden those people need your attention as well. And you go, I don't have enough energy for that. Like I don't like I'm tapped out. And that's, I think, how people get burnt out. But when you realize that there's wisdom in the way that you live your life when it comes to all different aspects of your life, when it comes to like paying your bills, to working your job, to spending time with your wife, to spending time with your kids, to spending time in the ministry, God will teach you. And I think that's such an important, it's so simple, but it's so important. How do I live my life well so that I am fully engaged in every aspect of what God has called me into? And money is one of those things that will suck the life right out of you. And I think with young people, especially if we grow up and we don't have a ton, it can take people out because it becomes such a bigger issue than it should be. It should be not that big of an issue. It should be our focal point is the ministry. And here's the last point. The last point is that everything is, like I said earlier, everything's grace. Everything. If you're tapped out and you're complaining, then just stop doing what you're doing. That's it. No one cares. You don't win an award at the end of it because you're the busiest person. Like, no one cares. And if you get to the ministry and you get to the church and you are expecting them to serve you and you realize, whoa, like, they don't care. Like, you're like, do you know what I'm going through? Like, I got emails and text messages and phone calls. No one cares. They would look at you and say, then why are you here? And I, you know, you have to realize that everything is grace in your life. So my wife is the most amazing blessing in my life. My kids are the most amazing blessing in my life. My job is it's amazing blessing in my life. And then the ministry is an amazing blessing in my life. And if I'm burnt out in any of those areas, the problem is not the thing, it's me. I'm the problem. So I am not managing my time the way that I should manage my time. And what I've found is that, for me personally, that you would think the way to recharge your battery is to like just go into a quiet place and read a book or just relax. But I've actually found the way I get recharged is being in the ministry. And I find that is really where I get pumped up. So when I go to work, if I go, I'm too tired to go to the ministry, I go to the cross, and by faith, I say, I'm going to go by faith, and God shows up, and I'm refreshed, and I leave, and I go, I couldn't live my life without having ministry in my life. It doesn't have to be a head pastor of a church, or it has to be some level, because service is where we find life, and life is what carries us into the other aspects of our life. And it seems like a complete contradiction. But in the ministry, and I've been there, I'm working 50 hours a week, and then I got to, no one cares. And God's like, then just go take a nap. No one cares. Then work 20 hours. No one cares. And that is like a lesson you got to learn. And in America, it's hard because things are expensive and all of this. But if God's called you to do it, is he going to provide? And my wife is like, don't let her fool you. She's like, she's a real estate agent, and she's working from home with two kids, like just killing it, like just amazing. And both of us, we get burnt out at times, and we go, all right, time out. Like, what do we have to do? We're doing something wrong if we're totally stressed out and burnt out and blaming everything. Because it's all grace. And Jesus would, if you're burnt out, Jesus would go, just take, go ahead. I'll make you a little cake like Elijah and take a little nap. And if you need to take a nap, take a nap. You need to take a vacation, take a vacation. Just relax. Take it easy. The whole world is not on your shoulders, right? And the last thing, I'm talking too much, but the last thing is that my wife goes, like, when I was younger, I never used to get stressed out like this. And I was like, because you were lifting 50 pounds. But now you're lifting 500 pounds. When were you stronger? Like, you're struggling under the weight of it, but when were you stronger? And when you get older, God's so gracious to give you responsibility little by little by little. And it's always enough to feel like you're not going to be able to get it up. But then you realize he's conforming me to the image of Christ. And the thing that I love the most about the church and people that have been walking with Christ for so long is that there's so much going on in their life, and you would never know it. They always edify and build other people. They're selfless, and that's what God's turning us into, where we're so self-involved and so selfish. And he's going to bring things into your life to push you into the deep end, where you go, the only way that you're going to be able to survive in the deep end is to take up the cross and be conformed to the image of Christ. And then you're thinking, how is this happening? And it's like, well, it's not me, because I'm selfish and lazy. It's Christ in me, in us. And we go, we're nothing, but God's doing something in our life, and it's so much fun, I wouldn't want to miss out on it. I don't want to miss out on it, so.
Thank you. As we wrap this up, I guess maybe if you have a marriage secret or tip that you can share, this is for all of you or any of you, is there something you do together that keeps your relationship strong? It could be funny, serious.
I don't know if I have a tip. I don't. I feel extremely unqualified to be giving anyone in this room a tip, unless it's changing diapers. I can do that maybe, but I don't even need to do that either. No, I guess my biggest. I would say. Wait, could you say the question again?
Mm-hmm. Is there something you do together that keeps your relationship strong?
Oh, I guess like. I don't want to. There's like practical things. We do like to travel and do those things. Like we enjoy traveling and like we just actually enjoy being with. Like if he asks me to go ride in the car with him, I'm like so excited. It's like I'm going to Disney World or something. I'm like yes, I'm excited. Like just being with him, I'm like love it. But I would say keep it strong. Like just being we're on the same team. Like if we have that mindset that we're on the same team, it's actually a lot of fun. And I feel like it can like help you not put unrealistic expectations on each other, which it's usually me. I'm the one who puts expectations on myself and on him. And that's like not his fault. Mm-hmm. But I guess just like we're on the same team. It, like living life with each other is like an honor and a privilege, and it can actually be a lot of fun. And like laughing, I would say, that's like a big one. It, whatever, because there's a lot of serious stuff that can come in just because of like life. You know, like some people in this room go through really intense thing. Like it's no joke. It's really amazing. It can. It's not that it's like marriage is intense. It's just that things in life that you go through can have an effect on your marriage, and that if you can be with each other, like, and you pray. I think both of us, we like prayer is so important to us, and it's you're not necessarily praying to like have something get over with, like the hard time, but for like God to be with you to carry you through that time. And that we have each other in it, and that we're on the same team. But we do like to travel and go on trips and stuff as far as something that we like to like do with each other. And ride in the car.
We got an exciting life. We get to go in automobiles, look out the window, see trees. But I think as a husband, too, like you start to take on, like, would I ever like essential oils? No. But now I do. Would I want to plant a tomato plant? No. I love it now. So it's like there's certain things. Antiques? Second thrift stores? No. I do now. I love it. So, I mean, it is. You have a man and a woman. Like, I'm like, hey, you want to play catch? And she's like, no. You want to plant a hydrangea bush? Sure. I mean, it's just taking on whatever she enjoys and it's just spending time together, having a good time. And my wife is, thing about my wife is she's extremely loyal. We have a very strong friendship. And we truly just enjoy being together. And if it just sit down and talk or doing what she wants to do or whatever it might be, it's fun. It's fun. It should be fun. And it's not always like easy, but at the same time, it's a blessing. If God gave you a great gift in life, it's like treat it like the greatest gift ever, and it really is.
I'm with Ann Margaret. I love to travel, and we love to travel together. We're actually leaving for Florida tomorrow, and we love that kind of stuff. And something we do together is we cook together. Like, we love to cook, and we love to have people in our home, and we love to entertain. So that's something we do together. And I think we're the same thing. We just enjoy each other's company. And just, we've always, even when the kids were little, purposed to spend time together, purposed to go away, even if it was just one trip a year, because we couldn't afford it, that's what we did. And then we just like to hang out together. I don't know. I think you just have to. He's my best friend.
I think Pastor Schaller said it this morning, and it's this: don't hesitate to say I'm sorry. I think too many times we get in a situation and we hesitate in that area, and I think that helps keep relationships strong. And Kim is amazing because she would ask people at Haas's that had married for many years, and she would say, why, you know, what kept you married for so many years? And my grandparents were married for 74 years before my grandmother passed away, and I couldn't figure out like what kept the relationship so strong. And it was because he was deaf and she was blind. So she couldn't tell if he was in the room, so she would talk a blue streak and he couldn't hear her, so they had a great relationship, and that's what worked out so well.
That's
amazing. It's true. Okay. I think what we've said is like learning to laugh at yourself. I think once you have kids, I mean, the situations you find yourself in, it's you just don't know. Like, you know, cleaning up vomit at 3 a.m. It's just like, that's not what I thought I was going to be doing. But doing things, I think doing hard, difficult things together and having fun doing it brings, you kind of just have a little bit more of like a bond after you've gone through things. And I, we've always encouraged like young, like new parents also, like to find ways to spend time just the two of you, because you can get your identity like as a couple can get lost in like your family dynamic, especially when your kids are really little. And even if you can't get away for a vacation, but having, you know, a date night every other week, that's nothing special. Like, it can just be like, you know, takeout and Target or something. But spending time together, like remember in the car. Don't even spend money. Just get in the car. Like, you can be creative if you don't have a big budget. Like, it's like you don't have to go out on a romantic date every week or something. But I think just reminding each other of, like, why you fell in love and continuing to do that over the years. And usually that is laughing and just being together. I mean, that's usually how things start, you know. And that can get forgotten when you're, like, sleep-deprived and you've got, you know, kids and not a lot of money in the bank account and all those things. So I think intentionally spending time just the two of you is really good. And then what was the other thing? I don't know. I forgot. What do you got?
Okay. I think just to, my two tips are, when we would go on dates, it's not always just you and me. We're always thinking about other people. And that, like, ministry life, like wanting to hang out with other people when we have a babysitter is actually really, it gets us fired up. We like it. We love being with other people. We realize, like, we want to get involved. We've realized, like, we want to, like, give. And then we come home from it and we're, like, so happy. It's not always like us candlelight, you know, like staring each other's faces. But it is. It's like being in a parking lot, you know, with another couple or hanging out with someone that is like needs it. You know, sometimes it's just like third wheel in this person. You know what I mean? Like it's not, like our 10 or anniversary a couple of years ago, we were like, just go spend it with this other new missionary couple, remember? And I think it was just such a good moment for us where we were like, hey, it's not always about us in this situation of ours that we got going on, but it's also about others. And we would just come home and just like so happy and so like joyful and had given and exchanged and talked and laughed and the whole deal. And then, the second thing is just, you know, growing up, we knew each other. Like, you start to learn about your significant other, and then you realize like what they like. And for us, it was we're very competitive, so we love watching. You know, we like soccer, so we have two teams that we like, but they always go against each other. And I remember always coming home Sunday evenings from church when we lived in Turkey with Pastor Mati, and it was like our thing to like watch a soccer game after late at night after church and eat. And there was nothing that could change that moment for us. And it meant so much to me that she like actually was like seriously cared and was engaged. And during those times, I realized how competitive she was and how competitive I was. And at first I always thought it would be a problem in our marriage, like, cause we're very like both of our families. But I've realized like that we've embraced it, the competitive nature. And like we use that in our relationship. And that was one of the ways we would like literally fight over some of the games. But we would come home laughing. And I just think that I recognized it right away that I thought it was an issue and it wasn't. And and now like I would say
on the same team, like speaks to that, I think too.
Yeah, for sure. So I mean I would just, again, just encourage you guys. Like, I think personally for me, it's always been like Justin, Pastor Justin said, like, he got refreshed when it was ministry. When my wife was by my side, like, you know, greeting the someone at the door that came, comes to our church that's a new believer, and us, like, having this incredibly full day of ministry and coming home and just talking about it. It was just we could just keep doing this. Like, what else is there to do, you know? And I think maybe that is a tip in itself, is, like, being together in this ministry or having that ministry together, you're coming home, you're, like, fired up, you know? Like, what's on your heart? What did you hear? Can you believe that she said this to you? Like, she asked that question, or he was like, can I have a Bible? You know, it was like, and we just come home to that. And I think that really hit home, I think, Justin, Pastor Justin, just that ministry together, and whether it's like a date or not, or something out there. So.
Thank you. Yeah, 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 yeah. That was good. Thank you for being with us. That concludes our panel. Thank you for being available and for putting time into this afternoon for us and praying about it and thinking through thoughts to share with us. And it was great hearing about you guys' lives, a little input, all of you. The Herbs, thank you. It was great. Hearing about giving grace and receiving grace and just opening up, sharing stories about your lives, and I know it's probably not easy, and you've shown, I mean, this is from my point of view anyway, you've shown that God really had favor on your lives and in your marriage. And one example is your kids' lives, like Colton in the youth ministry, Dakota in Bed Hill, and just, I think if your marriage wasn't strong, their lives would have been totally different. And now you've impacted the rest of us, so that's awesome. So thank you for showing that marriage is not perfect, like you said earlier, and it's not all rainbows and unicorns, I think you said, right? Because it does show that I think sometimes we can see or we view from the outside what somebody's marriage is like or what a relationship is like. And I think on the outside, we could have looked at you guys and said, hey, they got a perfect life and they've had a perfect marriage and everything. But that wasn't the case. It may be the case now that it's awesome. But anyway, so we really appreciated having you, all of you. Thank you for everything you've had for us this weekend. And thank you all for coming out. It was great having all of you. I'm glad we can all get together. It's important. And one thing I liked, I think Pastor Justin said something about ministry. It really does make an impact when you can come to the ministry. I know it can be difficult, especially right now with the things we're going through, but those Wednesday nights, you drag yourself in, but it's the best thing. Like, Wednesdays are tough because it's, what's church, like 7 o'clock or something? You're like, oh, God. But you get here, and it's like, whoa, you know, it's amazing. So really just build yourselves up. Be with people if you can, and encourage each other, encourage other relationships and marriages. And I think for us, if we, I know I've probably said it before, but as married couples, if we can really invest in the other people in our lives, like those single people that were with us last night, they do look at us, like they look at our marriages, they look at our relationships, they look at our ministry, the thing that we have for them. So I think if we really can purpose to invest in those lives, it's going to have a great impact. So thank you all for coming out. It's been great. So one announcement, practical, is that they said that the parking lot is pretty icy, so be careful going out there when you go out. So, all right. Thank you. Have a good night.
Hey, can we say, not to steal the show, but can we say to Ryan and to Krista, just an amazing job that they did as well. Thank you, Ryan.